Before we get cooking here on the Ira Kaufman podcast, I have to tell you about an amazing free event. Yes, free on Saturday, September 30th, this Saturday, noon to 3, the Italian Street Festival at Brandon Auto Mall, Alfa Romeo. Ira is going to be there. It's free family fun, homemade pizza, authentic Italian food, face painting, gelato. It's all free. There are great Alfa Romeo gifts when you test drive the brand new Alfa Romeo SUV, a first for Alfa Romeo in 2018. All the details are at joebucksfan.com. You can't miss it. Great food, fun, music for the whole family. And, of course, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is going to be there talking football. He's even got some gifts to give away. Great time to get a selfie with the Sage. Ed Morse, Brandon Auto Mall, Alfa Romeo. Be there. All the details at joebucksfan.com.
All right, Coach, you know, we give Ira a lot of crap here on the podcast. He says he knows you as your buddy. He loves you. You know, what can you say about Ira that you spent years around him as a journalist, as a guy?
Well, let me tell you this. He's got the greatest voice I ever heard. I can't imitate him well, but he's a friend of mine, and he's a guy I consider great at what he does because he does the work, and he watches practice. He takes pride in you know, getting the story correct, and he's just been loyal. I've always considered him a friend, and I consider him an expert when it comes to pro football.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Happy Sky is Falling Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman podcast, starring the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, Fox 13 television star, Sirius XM Mad Dog radio star, Ira Kaufman, JoeBucksFan.com columnist. That doesn't just come third, Ira. It really comes first, but we'll put it last for the podcast.
You know, I got bumped by Hurricane Irma a couple of weeks ago, Steve. I understand that. Killer storm, historic storm, you know, 480 miles wide. Well, Sunday I got bumped for Hurricane Winston. And based on his performance in Minneapolis, I think you would have been better off hearing from me for about 4 minutes.
Of course, your podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. I didn't realize that you got bumped for an interview with Jameis. Is that what happened?
They said they were granted a one-on-one with Jameis Winston, which I guess is so rare, you know, for the local media that they jumped all over it. And in the process, they squeezed me out because Ricky Reynolds has to opine for about 18 minutes on what's going to happen. That's all right. I'm still putting in an invoice, Nisbets, and I dare say you're not bumping me from this podcast. So I'm going to speak my piece.
This is great. It's week three of your new job with Fox Sports.
And I've been bumped twice.
And you complained in week one because the hurricane knocked you out. And now you're upset because your time was limited because Jameis Winston was on the air. Of course, that's every Sunday, Fox 13, Scott Smith's Tailgate, Sunday, 10:30 to 11.
Broke out a new sports coat. You know, yeah, and Javier doesn't even get to see it. Well, what's going on over there?
And may I say, Ira, you're much better looking than Roy Cummings on Channel 8. I mean, come on, there's no comparison.
By the way, you notice, Steve, as we sit here, I haven't shaved. And I'm going to make a vow that I'm not shaving until I can get the rotten memory of that game out of my mind. And I don't know how long. I might show up at $1 on Wednesday unshaven. And you don't want to see that sight.
I remember your mustache from a couple years ago.
So boy, I took a tremendous ribbon from that one.
All right. I'm Steve Isbitz. Of course,
I think Lovie Smith even weighed in on that one day from the podium, Steven.
He did. He did.
You know, anything to take away from the stench of a 2-14 season.
I remember regarding the mustache, right? So you were doing a spot for Bright House TV at training camp. And we were quoting you for a story, so I snapped a picture of you with the mustache, and we ran the picture. You're like, what are you doing? And you're like all over Lee. What are you doing with the picture? And I'm like, that's you. That's your mustache.
It's like a 70s porn star without the proper equipment.
So
that's what it was.
You had the mustache. But here, the comedy here, Ira. You had the mustache. You go on television with the mustache, but you're upset that we put it on the website.
Well, that's because Joe Bucksman carries a lot of clout around these parts, my friend. As you notice, the mustache is history. And so is the Bucks' unbeaten record for 2017.
Well, still undefeated, of course, Ira, is Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. You can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind right now at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All our certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Financing for a limited term with approved credit on select Cadillac certified pre-owned models. The dealer has all the details. And Ira, also, of course, Edmore's Cadillac Tampa. Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher. The savings rush is on there. Get clearance pricing on every 2017 in stock. It's that time of year. Every 2017 in stock. Every 2017 must go. Rush to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa or visit edmorriscadillactampa.com. And Ira, Saturday, how many calories? What's the over-under for calories at the Italian Street Festival?
I got to think 2,800. 2,800. And I think for a guy my size, the daily maximum is about 1,800. So I might not be able to eat all day on Sunday. But then again, I'll be at the Bucks game with the Bananas Foster, the Cuban sandwiches. It's going to be a real test for me.
When's the last time you ate 1,800 calories in a day, Kaufman? Come on, man. Unbelievable.
You mean breakfast? And right. By the way, speaking of Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Steve, this is the time of year when the new inventory comes in. And when that happens, you get some real deals. You know, the 2018 models are in. You get some real deals on the 2017s.
All right, Ira. Bucks, everyone is waiting for your sage wisdom. Buccaneers, Vikings, train wreck. Let's start with the coaching. What'd you think?
Well, if you think I'm going to give the coaching staff a pass because they were missing some key contributors, you got a second thing coming. You don't know me. Who says next man up 40 times a week? Dirk Cutter. Next man up, no excuses. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us. This is a no-excuse league. All right, well, here we are. The morning after, 2 days after, that was a terrible performance. Juan Alexander on the sideline. Brent Grimes on the sideline. Swaggy Baker on the sideline. You know what I say? So what? Let me put it to you like this, Steve. Suppose I told Buck fans a week ago, Everson Griffin, Anthony Barr, and Xavier Rhodes were not going to play for the Vikings. And oh, by the way, Jameis Winston wasn't going to play. You got Fitzpatrick. Buck fans wouldn't have taken that. They would have said, absolutely not. We got to have our quarterback. You don't have your first-string quarterback, you're dead in this league. Well, guess what? They just got shredded by a backup quarterback. A, quote, journeyman, unquote. Case Keenum. Yeah, I know he did it to him 2 years in a row, Steve. This is supposed to be a better defense. The problems have been fixed from the midseason, you know, the bye week last year. They did whatever they wanted, Steve. Whatever they wanted. Mike Smith, that's not going to go. That's not going to go into a time capsule. Mike Smith, too passive, too safe. You know, the great John Tortorella, who led the Lightning to the Stanley Cup. He used to have a saying in the Lightning locker room. We used to quote it all the time. Safe is death. That means he wants his boys to play aggressively. Respect your opponent. Don't be scared. Yesterday, they looked scared. They looked scared of Case Keenum. Stephon Diggs is a nice receiver. Is he going to get a bust in Canton? Kyle Rudolph? This guy Thielen? Come on now, Steve. The Vikings are known for their defense, not their offense. I think they could have finished with 600 yards if they didn't call off the dogs and just, you know, pack it in with Dalvin Cook, who, by the way, looked better and better as the game went on. Kid's a stud. He's had three very good games. Played three games. He's played three very good games. No excuses, Steve. Offensively, Cutter's got to be a little more imaginative than that. If you're getting crushed with the pass rush, Cutter, you were masterful with the screen pass as an offensive coordinator. Charles Sims, devastating in 2015. How do you think he got 1,000 yards from scrimmage, backing up an all-pro running back? Screen passes were beautiful. Draw plays, nice. We're not seeing them. Deep balls. I'll say it again. I want four deep balls a game. I don't care how many are incomplete. I want four deep balls. I didn't see it. So not a good day for the coaching staff, and obviously the execution was terrible, and we'll get into that.
The Case Keenum thing, and that is very important because this is 3 years in a row now. Keenum has torched the Bucs. Now, of course, the first time it's Lovie Smith. Okay, understandable. Mike Smith, he saw Case Keenum, saw his whole act last year, and Keenum carves up the same defense again. Mike Smith is a guy who takes pride, great pride, he'll tell you, in disguise, in fooling quarterbacks.
That's adjustments.
That's a big part of his game. Adjustments, disguising coverages, that kind of stuff, adjusting to a quarterback. Keenum, just Dirk Cutter said after the game, and he was obviously exhausted, but it was half tongue in cheek. He looked like the best player in the NFL out there. Keenum, they blitzed over and over. Blitz didn't get there, Ira. Three quarterback hits. Now, this team right now,
he was under no duress, Steve. None.
No duress. And he made some good plays. The guy obviously played a great football game. But you know what? When you got, you know, more cushion on the receivers.
They're running wide open.
Than you find at rooms to go. What's going on? I mean, what do you think as far as coaching? Mike Smith and the staff, Ryan Smith, Vernon Hargraves, just too much room on receivers. Is this a talent issue, or is that part coaching, or what's going on there?
I just think they showed him way too much respect. You know, that's what you do against DeSean Jackson, maybe. Stephon Diggs doesn't have that kind of pedigree of DeSean Jackson, who you don't, you know, necessarily play head up because you're worried you're going to get beat deep. And here's the irony of the whole thing. They still got beat deep with all the cushioning. Still got beat deep. And on the flip side, the Bucs had very few, I believe they had two pass completions longer than 20 yards. Both were to DeSean Jackson. One was a touchdown, and there was another one. Mike Evans did not have a reception of more than 18 yards. Not a lot of deep balls for the Bucs, you know, trying to grind it out. And as you pointed out before we even started this podcast, I thought it was 9 rushing attempts. You think it was 8 rushing attempts? I can't remember.
It was 8 handoffs. One was by Jameis. One was a scramble.
You know what? In a good world, you do that in a quarter. That's a good ratio for a quarter. The Vikings ran 35 times. The Bucs ran 8. So, look, I know the game got out of hand a little bit, but you can't totally abandon your game plan. Otherwise, you're going to pay the price.
Well, and we wrote this on JoeBucksFan.com. And let me say, Lee DeCamper is not with us today. He is traveling back from Minnesota. Well, I'm sure you saw a lot of his good stuff from the locker room at the game. Lee will be back on Thursday's podcast. Ira, the Buccaneers, have you ever seen a team hand off 8 times and win a ball game? Do you recall anything like that?
It's among the lowest numbers in recent Buck history. There's no question about it.
It was just, again, you know, with the...
And it was their lowest rushing total yards, 16, in 35 games. That's a long time.
Yeah, it was pretty darn stunning. I thought Cutter was just off. The game, like you wrote in your column, the game plan's not going to be showing up in Canton anytime soon. It was just off. What happened to the jump balls, the 50-50 balls to Mike Evans? These are, you know, you're calling for these deep balls. Part of them have to go to Evans. Do you think Cutter just doesn't believe he's a deep threat in this league?
Well, I mean, I know.
A home run threat?
Xavier Rhodes and Cutter said, you know, during the week, it's a heck of a matchup. Rhodes, one of the best cornerbacks in football. But he's not Revis in his prime, Rhodes. He's not. He's good. But, you know, Cutter also said last week, I'm taking my chances with Mike Evans, that he's going to come up with the football. Now, they did target him 12 times, Steve. They hit 7. Not a great percentage. But after that first drive, I don't think Jameis Winston did much out there. I just don't think he did much. Forced some balls, and you made a great point. Made another bonehead play that nobody's going to talk about because Brate came back in great fashion. A lot of credit to Brate for hustling his buns off.
Great play.
Could have been an interception. And if it was, I dare say Winston would have got reamed out to holy hell by Cutter on the sidelines, and he would have deserved it.
Now, obviously, great Vikings defense there. Overall, Ira, Cutter's game plan, I know you didn't like it, and obviously they got thrown off their game. Did you like the comeback, though? The Bucs did show a lot of spirit. They didn't roll over like they did in in Arizona last year. This game was close until Jameis screws up, throws into...
It was 31-17, and I thought they had a chance because they were driving.
But Jameis threw into triple coverage in the red zone, pick, game over. What's your take on where Jameis is right now in his game? 34 starts in his career. What's going on here?
Well, based on the first two games this year, he's got to be better. He's got to be better. I expect him to be better. He expects himself to be better. Now, no turnovers against Chicago, but I didn't think he was overly sharp. This game, they lose the turnover battle 3-0. Part of that's on the defense, no takeaways. Not even close to a takeaway. I didn't see anything even close. Winston, some shaky decisions, locked in sometimes a little too much to Evans. I want to see more O.J. Howard. I want to see a little more Godwin. Look, they're 1-1. Sky's not falling, Steve. Get some guys back. But I thought the Bucs were past a performance like that because it reminded me a little bit of the first half of last season. And, heck, we thought they were past that. And I'm not cutting them much slack for the injured players. I'm just not doing it.
Yeah, very well said, Ira. I think that sort of encompasses how most fans feel is I thought the Bucs were beyond this. I thought they were beyond a non-competitive. Now, I just said they could have gotten back in the game, but a beatdown. And it wasn't just a blowout. This team got just completely wiped out physically. Wiped out. I mean, we're talking Noah Spence, Gerald McCoy, Quan Alexander didn't play, Lavonne David, TJ Ward, Grimes was out.
That probably means you were not the aggressor. That probably, you know, unless there's a fluke injury. And Lavonne Davids, I think, was a little bit of a fluke injury.
Of course, of course.
But usually, if you're getting beaten down all over the field physically, that's when you get hurt because the other team's more aggressive.
And Grimes, I was watching one of the post-game shows last night. Apparently, he got a significant knee bruise, what that means. But it just speaks to the physical nature of the game. Didn't go in the Bucks' direction.
Grimes?
Hargraves.
Oh, Hargraves. Okay.
Of all those injuries, Ira, Noah Spence, and by the time this podcast posts, frankly, I think Noah Spence might end up on injured reserve. If his shoulder, his surgically repaired shoulder, pops out, I mean, I'm not a doctor, Ira, but that ain't good.
And if that happens, Buck fans are going to be screaming that they didn't address defensive end in the offseason.
Well, they're already screaming. Now, of those guys, Spence, McCoy, Alexander, David, Ward, Grimes, if we have to play mix and match for this next game, who do you want in there? Who's the most valuable guy now?
Well, we've talked about it, and in terms of Mr. Indispensable, look, by the numbers, it looks like it's Quan Alexander. They haven't won a game without Quan Alexander in the last 3 years. 0-5, correct?
Absolutely.
Four-game suspension and what happened yesterday. I got to put Grimes number two because we saw the drop-off. Grimes is the stability of that entire secondary to me. The savvy veteran, rarely beaten, rarely tested. And when Mike Smith knows he's got Grimes on one side, Mike, it frees him up to do some stuff. Grimes doesn't need a lot of help. Maybe you help out Hargraves a little. You help out the slot guy. When Grimes isn't there, it's a free-for-all, as we saw yesterday. And, of course, McCoy, obviously, with the three technique. Some fans are looking at yesterday as a referendum on the importance of Swaggy Baker. I'm not ready to go there. He didn't make a tackle in game one, but their run defense was very, very good. Yesterday, their run defense was poor, I would say. Poor tackling. Now, Cook's going to make you miss. I understand that. But Chicago's got a good running game, and the Bucs did shut him down. But I'm not ready to say that the loss of Chris Baker's devastating. I don't know if you're willing to go there either.
No, of course not. Come on. I thought the run defense was okay yesterday. Cook really had one long...
In the first half, it was okay. I think it was okay.
He had one long run. I think he finished, 26 or 27 carries for 98 yards. It wasn't anything...
It hurt him a little bit in the passing game.
Spectacular. The Bucs had 9 or 8 handoffs. They had more yardage in those 8 handoffs than Cook had in his first 8 handoffs. They were okay. Will Golston showed up again.
Yes.
He's big against the run. The guy just can't rush the passer.
Speaking of rush the passer,
one of the scariest parts of this season right now, I think, as we sit here and overreact on a Monday, on a Tuesday, because, hey,
That's
what we do. We got to talk about what's on our plate. You know, you don't like your dinner? Well, we don't have any more food to talk about yet.
You know, and it was all positive after week one, and now you got to take your lumps.
Exactly. So, Robert Ayers, solid year last year, but banged up, 32 years old. What's the deal with this guy? Are we watching the end of Robert Ayers?
He's looking 32, Steve. He's looking like he's 32. Make a couple of plays, Ayers. Make a couple of plays. You're healthy. Now, look, I was the first guy last year to say his leadership contributed, greatly. It's hard to measure intangibles, but Ayers is a man in that locker room. He generates a lot of respect from the younger players.
Sure.
And even the veterans like Gerald McCoy and Clinton McDonald. But at some point, leadership also means you got to make some plays. And we're not seeing it from Ayers. You know, Jacquees Smith, unavailable. Now you're talking about Noah Spence. Golston's no factor on the pass rush. They blitzed extensively and got nowhere yesterday. So, look, Cutter was right. I think his point was well taken in the Chicago game. Not many sacks, but decent pressure. Decent pressure. Glennon was under duress. It might have contributed to some of his mistakes. After the game yesterday in Minneapolis, it was Cutter who said, no pass rush. Zero pass rush.
Yeah, zero.
He said it.
He said it, and he was right. And as we transition out of the doomsday mode, if you really start to think about, okay, well, if Noah Spence has some sort of chronic issue here and with his shoulder, and Robert Ayers this is his last year because he's on the downside and they're not going to pay him another $8-6 million next season. What do we got at defensive end here?
Maybe you get Jack Smith back. Maybe.
Maybe.
Who knows? And, you know, is he a guy you can really count on? I'm kind of with you.
Situational guy. I don't know.
You know, might get 6 or 7. Might.
Well, he's been good before, but you can't rely on him. You can't count on him. And it's scary. They're back to the same boat. And if you look at Jason Light, Ira, who we know doesn't have a contract, Jason Light, if he has to go into the Glazers' office.
And they say Spencer's injured both seasons. Well,
not even that, Ira. He has to go. He has to walk into Team Glazer and explain why he needs a fifth year to build a pass rush. That's a tough nut right there. That's a tough sell. And especially if Swaggy Baker isn't, setting the world on fire or is on the, and he turns, he's 30 years old now too. So what are we expecting out of Swaggy, who doesn't like to practice, who then had a bye week, who then had the flu? What's his conditioning going to be like for the Giants, Ira?
They're counting on Noah Spence. They're counting on him.
Big time.
To be a difference maker. And if that shoulder's not right, Steve, you know, it casts the season in a whole different light.
Yeah, it is scary. Scary for the future. But, all right, Ira, 1-1 is the record. A lot of fans going doom and gloom because that's what they do. And
No reason to get on top of the Skyway Bridge, Steve, and then threaten to jump off.
I mentioned on my podcast, we don't have to reset it fully, but 6 years in a row, the Bucks have suffered horrific.
Little kick in the groin, my friend.
Horrific kick in the groin losses in September. So that explains the fans. But
hey, the Giants are 0-3.
Two
Steve.
Games.
I mean, you know, the Bucks are 1-1.
Giants
with
coming
two
up.
Home games coming
Giants
up.
Coming up is with them at 0-3 and the Patriots behind them. And the Patriots who've rebounded incredibly from their opening day loss. And Tom Brady, what he pulled off yesterday is just one of those things. You have to tip your hat, even as much as you might hate the guy.
Very demoralizing loss for the Giants. Very demoralizing after a comeback.
So Giants 0-3, demoralizing loss, coming in here to Tampa. Is this now a must-win for the Bucks?
I think you got to have Grimes out there, Steve, one way or another. Do you want Odell Beckham going against Hargraves and Chris Conte? Ryan Smith, is that what you want? I mean, Beckham woke up Sunday.
Yeah, Sterling Shepard had a huge day.
Brandon
Marshall's still there. They have the receivers. They may not have the pass blocking.
And if they don't get the rush, you know, suppose Spence doesn't play.
Sure, or McCoy.
You know, and McCoy's better than Case Keenum, you would think.
Manning.
Manning's better than Case Keenum. So don't make it easy for Eli Manning. Don't make it easy on this guy. And Keenum did whatever he wanted yesterday, Steve. Instead of making them squirm, they let them flourish. And I just think it was a tactical mistake.
So we're going to get into more about the Giants on Thursday. Obviously, we'll know more about the injuries, the Giants' injuries. And Thursday is always when we focus a little bit.
Steve, if they finish the first quarter 2-2, the sky's not falling.
No, that's good.
Because the schedule flattens out a little.
Schedule flattens out. You got past some stuff. You didn't lose your home field edge because you won 2 out of 3 at
Maybe
home.
Maybe some guys are back. You know, 2-2, it's not bad.
Must win against the Giants, Ira?
You got to win one of the next two. Otherwise, you got to stop going 1-3. This team goes 1-3. It's like every year, one time. And the year they didn't, it was 0-4. Stop digging holes for yourself.
If this team goes 1-3 with an extra time off because of losing on Thursday night.
And beating the Bears when they were dreadful.
This town's going to check out. And that's sad. And not doom and glooming. We said we weren't going to doom and gloom, but they got to beat the Giants. Got to beat the Giants. Take a deep breath. Maybe get another guy or two back healthy. Maybe the team gambles on Doug Martin. Maybe to bring him back. And
that's a little crack in the Isbits facade
there. No facade. You know, we've been writing on JoeBucksFan.com that and we've said on the podcast, Ira, Martin needed some breaks, some things to go his way. Well, first, you know, I had put out there 15% chance he returns. Stuck with that. Well, his first big break came when Jeremy McNichols didn't make the roster. That was break number one. Break number two came when it's obvious that Charles Sims is not the runner that he was in 2015, and the team doesn't have the confidence to hand him the football.
Break number three. Eight carries for 16 yards.
Break number three. I'm not sure break number three is there yet. Not sure break number three there yet, but I think if you really start speculating, all these injuries on defense, if they really pile up and you to good players who you don't want to make who you don't want to put on injured reserve, then they're holding roster spots. I don't know. But break number three, actually, honestly, Ira, break number three probably showed up when they didn't hand the ball to Peyton Barber yesterday, which, after all that hype of Barber, it's interesting. But we'll follow the Martin situation.
You know, Cutter talks about how sometimes a player gets lost, Steve, and I think that's what happened yesterday. Peyton Barber got lost. Now, he did show up in the game. He did play. The only guy that didn't play was Ryan Fitzpatrick. From the 46 guys who dressed. But Barber had no carries, Steve. Zero. When everybody after the Chicago game was saying he was their most effective back. So it's kind of befuddling.
It was, yes, befuddling. Good word, Kaufman. Good word. All right. So, Ira, a little bit more on the positive note and going back to something that we saw but didn't see at the same time in the game. You know, we heard a lot about how O.J. Howard is an exceptional weapon. And he can block.
Three down tight end.
He's an exceptional weapon. Jameis has never seen a big man like that run so fast. He can do it all. I'm sure his blocking is just fine, and he's drawn a lot of kudos, but they've thrown him two passes in two games. Is that a mistake? Now, granted, one pass was tipped in the other week, so we'll just call it three passes. He has two receptions. What's going on,
Steve?
Here?
He's a first-round pick. First-round picks supposed to contribute immediately. This is not the 210th player taken in the draft. The Bucs bypassed Dalvin Cook for O.J. Howard. Let's remember that. And I'm not saying that was a bad move, but I want to see a little more of O.J. Howard. I assume he's doing a decent job blocking. But I want to see him more involved in the passing game. Look, they threw a lot of balls yesterday. Well,
that's the point. They opened it up yesterday because they had to, in a lot of ways, trailing. And what, Jameis threw 40 passes, I believe, 28 for 40?
They didn't get a lot of snaps, though. Not total. Totally, you know, they only had the ball for 22 minutes.
Sure.
That's a big problem.
A lot of passes, not a lot to O.J. Howard, who's supposed to be this threat.
Supposed to be a mismatch.
That's the whole point. Now, I get that the Vikings are loaded on defense. I get that. But still, it's interesting to watch this develop. Chris Godwin, very pleased with how he showed up. Rough opening day. He showed up. He looked like a number three, four receiver that we haven't had
looked
here.
Like a guy who's going to fight for the football. And that's his reputation.
Looked like the guy we've seen all through training camp and preseason. That was really encouraging. And I'm starting to wonder, Ira, and I wanted to ask you this. I saved this question just for you. My phone is ringing, and I don't know who it is, so I'm not taking that call,
Ira. Could be Jason Light listening to this podcast.
It could be. We're not live. We're only on iTunes, Podbean, JoeBucksFan.com, Google Play, and we're not live. But
you say you got a burning question for me. You got something.
Yeah. Look, Godwin showed up. Yesterday looked good, looked strong, guy we thought. Is that the impetus here for Dirk Cutter to make the pivot and make this a pass-first offense all out, line them up four wide, and let's play the game completely to our strengths and not joke around here?
Steve, that sounds good on paper. It might appeal to some Buck fans. But Cutter also craves balance, you know, and even, you know, the 99 Rams, the 2001 Rams, the greatest show on turf, they had Marshall Faulk, Steve. Now, they threw him the ball a lot, but he was also gaining 1,300 yards on the ground. So let's not forget that. Cutter loves to play action, Steve, and until the Bucs can prove that they can run the ball consistently well, which I still think is a question at this point, dating back to the start of the 2016 season, teams aren't going to respect the fake to, Charles Sims or Jacquizz Rodgers. They're not going to respect it. They're going to keep the heat on Winston. Now, you're the one who pointed out that when Winston throws 35 or more passes, the Bucs don't have a very good record in the last couple of years. So I don't see that happening, Steve. Abandoning the run game, I think, is something that would happen only by circumstance, which is like down 21-3 at the half, and next thing you know, it's 28-3. early third quarter.
Well, Cutter,
I don't see Cutter doing that.
Cutter said just the other night on Sirius, he said that 64 plays is your typical offensive output, and you want 30 runs. That's the basically, he laid that out as this is the numbers you shoot for, 30 runs, 34 passes.
Yesterday, I think they might have had only 51-something snaps. That's not enough.
Right, not enough snaps. They didn't have enough possession. But maybe in a typical game, could we be looking to Cutter shifting to, okay, we want 40 passes and 24
you could
runs.
You could. They got all those shiny weapons, Steve. There's no question about it. And Buck fans want to see them all utilized. And Cutter's proven in 2015 that he's an outstanding play caller. That's how he made his bones in this league. And he's a quarterback guru. That's part of big part of the reason he's got the job right now. And we want to see a little more development from Jameis Winston. Steve, I don't think that's too much. Now, I'm not blaming Jameis Winston for the loss yesterday. But he didn't play particularly well. He just didn't.
No, and that's the key to the season. It always was. It always was. Jameis has to take a step to be able to get them to 10 wins in this crazy competitive division and really a very competitive conference as well. And he's got to take that step. So far, two games, only two games, we haven't seen it. Now, Ira, first...
Hold on. We're not going to let Big Ali Marpet off the hook here either, Steve. He's got to work on his... look, there's nothing simple. There's nothing more simple in the game of football from peewee, to the NFL than the center quarterback exchange. That's as elemental as it gets, Steve. And right now, it's a problem. It's an issue.
That's like you and a bagel on Sunday morning.
And a schmear. That's the basic elements of life over there, Steven. So there were some errant. And Jameis made a few nice plays to grab a few.
He did.
He's that athletic. If that was Case Keenum, the ball's on the ground. So Marpet's got to work. We said there was going to be a learning curve, and it's obvious there is. Marpet wasn't happy with his first day performance against Chicago. He's certainly not going to be happy with the Minneapolis performance.
No, and it's what can you say? I mean, the learning curve should – we all expected it, except for the guys at One Buck Place. And it showed its head against the Vikings. Two bad snaps. You just can't do that. You can't do that. Maybe, but again, it's early. The O-line, I thought they were okay.
Okay.
They really didn't get a chance to run block. The running backs weren't hitting the backfield. And when they did run, and you know what? The pass protection was excellent. That really wasn't the problem yesterday at all. Charles Sims, Jaquizz Rodgers, excellent pass blocking guys. There were no issues.
The irony, Winston. Traditionally a slow starter, correct? We've documented it many times on this podcast.
And we saw
it. But he started 5 for 5 yesterday.
Yeah.
He did. And then went downhill from there. I pointed out in my column, after that initial drive that ended with that field goal, which Buck fans were disappointed that they didn't get 7, and they should be disappointed. So they were down 7-3. Steve, the next 5 possessions, 4 punts and an interception. I mean, that's no way to go into
half. Yeah, no way to go. No way to go at all. And it was a good column, Ira. I enjoyed it. If you're not reading Ira's columns, what are you doing? What are you doing? Of course, thanks to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. We bow to them and salute them all the time here on the podcast. EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com, EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Ira, in the NFL, we're going to hit you, since you are the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Tampa Bay's only Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. It would be criminal not to hit you here with a little bit of extra time because Lee's not here, so we have a little bit of extra chatter from the sage to hit you with some NFL stuff. So the first thing I'm going to hit you with NFL-wise, which is related to the Bucs, is, look, Cameron Bray took a clear shot to the back of the head yesterday in the end zone, and Mike Evans took a clear shot to the back of the head as well, forearm to the back of the head on the play that was intercepted at the end of the game, or that put the nail in the coffin to the Bucs. No call. What's going on in this league when you've got safeties going with the forearm to the head, and then in Brate's case, it was really helmet to helmet, I thought, and nothing.
Now, Steve, the interception would have still stood. It would have stood, and then it would have been a penalty assessed probably on the return. I understand.
I'm not sure,
saying.
But still.
Yeah. Unless the hit came before the ball touched Evans's fingers or arms. But they miss things, Steve. They miss things. And speaking of missing things, like you, I was watching the end of the Lions-Falcons game. And by the way, I think Stafford's a little bit underrated. I think he's a little bit underrated. He doesn't have great weapons around him. He's got decent weapons, Golden Tate. He's okay. You know, he's probably a number two receiver. For them, he's a number one. Stafford's got a lot of fourth quarter comebacks, and he almost pulled one off yesterday. Maybe he really did. What a way to end a game. Steve, like you said, the refs get it wrong, and the Lions pay the price. Steve, that can't happen in the NFL.
No, you'll see a rule change from that.
The 10-second runoff. The fans were stunned. They didn't know what was going on. I don't think Jim Caldwell did either.
No, it's crazy. You know, Stafford, I don't even know if he's been underrated. And I think people have respected his fight for a long time. He got beat up as a young player. He also had Calvin Johnson there to throw to. But just a good football player. You know, that year we got Josh Freeman and the Lions got Matthew Stafford. But definitely a true franchise quarterback. He's just
And Caldwell's not a bad coach.
He's not a Hall of Famer, but a true franchise quarterback.
Caldwell's not bad.
The guy who's definitely underrated, kept the team together.
He just got an extension. He just got it.
And he was on the hot seat for a while there and a lot of issues going on.
Well, they collapsed in December, Steve. They did collapse. They didn't show up.
Yeah.
Green Bay zoomed right past them. But, you know, he doesn't have great talent, but they're competitive every week.
Hey, you know who they have now? The Lions signed George Johnson. Sackless George Johnson.
Back with
they brought him back. And an interesting story out of Detroit, Ira. I thought this was fascinating. I'm curious to see what you make of this. Detroit, you know, the Bucs cut him at the end of preseason. Okay, so Jordan, no surprise, he was terrible and just doing his sackless thing that he does. And George Johnson leaves the Bucs, and he goes talks to the Lions, and they tell him, look, you got to lose 10 pounds. Now, this is George Johnson told this
story. You're out of shape.
You got to lose 10 pounds. And maybe you're in shape, but you need to be leaner so you can be quicker. And that's the George Johnson we want that we remember. So George Johnson comes back to Tampa, and he's just going all out cardio. He's walking his dog literally all over the neighborhood when he's finishing his workout just to...
A lot of beet salads.
We're talking, you know, when he's not working out, he's walking just trying to lose this weight. And he did, and he went back and told them, hey, I got the weight off. I think I did it the right way. And they signed him. And then he joins Akeem Spence, who's backing up Haloti Ngata and what all the guys up there. And he's reunited, and he's happy, and he felt that he did need to lose the weight. So why didn't the Bucs tell him to lose weight? You know, I'm curious to see if he actually does anything up there where they need pass rushers.
Oh, and that's all Buck fans got to hear is George Johnson finishing with 9.5 sacks.
Exactly. If George Johnson, because the Bucs play the Lions this year, if George Johnson comes here and sacks Jameis Winston, sack fumble for George Johnson, that would just be a Buccaneers script like only we can write here in this town.
Now, Steve, we do have to address the elephant. There is an elephant out there.
Is this my Jaguars?
No. And by the way, the Jags have played 3 games, and they've looked great in 2 of them. They've looked fantastic. They looked terrible in the other
one. You know who they get next week?
Who we got?
The Jets.
Oh.
How about 3-1 for the Jaguars?
How about if you're a Dolphins fan? You don't show up? You don't show up against a team that's tanking? Well, what the heck's going on?
Josh McCown threw a dart.
A laser.
50 yards in the air.
Boom.
50 yards in the air, touchdown. Austin Seferian-Jenkins back from suspension. 5 catches, Ira. 5
catches?
It's unbelievable.
That matches one of his season totals.
The Jets can't even tank effectively. How about that? But you know what? The Jets fans, their big rivals are the Miami Dolphins going back decades, and they love that victory. And it'd be very interesting to see. Because to me, and that's just a weird game on the schedule next week, but if the Jets go 2-2, that shocks New York with the Giants 0-3. It's the Jets who are 2-2. Or if Jacksonville goes 3-1 with Blake Bortles and a total treasure trove of defensive talent, either way that game goes, it's a shock to the NFL.
Steve, the early going in the NFL is quite remarkable. I mean, really, when you think about it. Denver playing fierce defense its first 2 weeks at home, go up to Buffalo. You know, the Bills aren't Supermen, certainly. They lay an egg. The Bills beat him. McCoy didn't even do anything, and I know because I got him in the fantasy league. So it wasn't the LeSean McCoy show.
He did less than nothing.
He did less than nothing. Another team that didn't show up, the Dolphins, don't show up after a week one victory. The Raiders don't show up against what I think is an average Redskin team. Average.
How about the Redskins getting rid of DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, and their top interior lineman,
Chris Baker.
Swaggy Baker. They're 2-1, no problem. They're scoring points.
And they were competitive in the other game. They could be 3-0. The Steelers don't show up against the Bears. Steve, the Bears beat the Steelers. What's going on in this league in the early going?
It's wild, and I think it speaks well to the NFL. The NFL's got to be loving it. You know, they talk about college games going down to the wire and
great
excitement.
Great competitive games yesterday.
Great competitive football games, and you know who else?
Except in Minneapolis, Steve.
Yeah. You know who else has to go to Buffalo, Ira? The Bucks.
Your Buccos.
In a few weeks. Makes you wonder, you know, keep your eye on that, because that's a tough spot.
What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like at Ray J on Sunday, Steve? Late afternoon game, sellout. Brian Ford's going to be walking around beaming, sellout. Steve, there might be a sprinkle of New York fans in the crowd. Might be. Right?
I think it's going to be just what everybody has expected from past years. I think you're going to be looking at 8,000 to 10,000 blue shirts out there. Big blue.
In their big blue.
Doing their big blue thing, you know, coming down
Beckham
here.
Beckham jerseys, you know, Eli.
Just doing what they do. Look, you were at the last Buccaneers playoff game, and you saw that it was at least 25,000 Giants fans in that stadium in Tampa for what was the last playoff game. It was that bad.
That was the wild card Giants that ended up winning
it all. Won it all, exactly. And that's what we're going to get here. So, you know, hopefully the Bucs themselves can take them out of the game, just like the Bears did. They took the Bears fans out of the game, and the stick carriers and the Bucks fans, you know, they've sold a lot of tickets, and there's a lot of good things happening, but it's going to be not the environment Dirk Cutter's looking for.
I'm joining Miko this week. I'm keeping a close eye on Brent Grimes. Odell Beckham's coming to town, Steve. If he's not the best receiver in the league, he's on the short list with Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, and Mike Evans, A.J. Green. A lot of great receivers in this league. Beckham's right in the mix. He woke up last week. He's the master of the one-handed catch. He's incredibly acrobatic, and he's a very, very tough assignment.
He's a great player.
And if there's no Brent Grimes, it might be a long day for the Bucs secondary, as we just witnessed.
Look, Vernon Hargraves, in addition to the bad stuff he's done this year, last year he didn't cover the number one receiver. So if he does grab Odell Beckham, because Grimes played every snap, or just about every snap last year, every game, if Hargraves has to man up here, he's going to draw Beckham.
Tough. And he's going to need help.
And he's going to be tested. There's no way they're not going after that, after what they've seen from Hargraves.
Especially in the red zone. Especially in the red
zone. And his height and everything else. So,
and Shepard's good.
Shepard's excellent. Shepard's an excellent player. That trio is better than anything than the Bucs have. You know, Marshall and Beckham and Shepard. It's very interesting.
The Giants
matchup.
Are not a juggernaut, Steve. Well,
it's not a great football team. It's just if the Bucs are still hurt, it's a brutal, brutal matchup. Anyway, so Kaufman, let me go here with you. You said the elephant in the room, and I cut you off. What is the elephant, and what do you got to say about it?
The elephant is kneeling for the anthem, the protests, taking this league by storm. Everybody's weighing in. Goodell, the owners, including the Glazers, all the players are talking about it at the press conferences. So the onus has kind of been taken away from the game a little bit. Look, I just want to make a couple of points. The issues seem to be dying down until the president got involved. And now it's on the front burner like never before. But I do want to remind everybody of one point. And you always hear this. Players have the right under the First Amendment for freedom of speech. Nobody is arguing that. Nobody. But let me throw in the second part of the statement. There is no freedom from repercussions. There might be repercussions. It doesn't look like there will be. But there could have been, realistically, because this is the flag we're talking about in the national anthem. And it's held sacrosanct by a majority of Americans, whether you like it or not. And these protests are taking place at the workplace while you're wearing team colors, uniform, helmet, So you're kind of representing more than yourself here. I just think that fact has been glossed over a little bit. Steve, you work out of the house, so nobody cares what kind of T-shirt you wear. But I was making the point that, you know, if Chris Collinsworth shows up for a Sunday night game with Al Michaels, and he's wearing a shirt, you know, that has a message on it that might be controversial or might, you know, offend some people, he's out of the booth. He may never be back in a booth. That's what happens. So this is their workplace. And I don't have any problem. I'd respect it a little bit more if the players were making these points, which might be valid on their own time. Let Michael Bennett have a press conference in Seattle on Tuesday. You know it, I know it. All the cameras will come out if he announces he's speaking at 1 o'clock. They'll all be there. They're not gonna shun Michael Bennett. And then he can speak, you know, almost to the nation. It's all going to be on the news that night, whatever he wants to say, whether it's bad cops or unfair treatment or whatever.
Well, let me throw this at you.
So I'm just making this distinction that it's happening at the workplace.
Let me throw this at you, Ira. The owners own the workplace. The NFL owners, that's their workplace. So,
and players look at them for the signal of what's going on.
What we've learned in the last week is that the owners are cool with it. They're fine with it. I haven't seen an owner. Maybe I've missed something. I personally don't really care too much about this at all because I don't care. You know, you want to do what you want to do, fine. It doesn't affect me watching the game, and the game's an escape. It's sports.
They've decided they can't afford to alienate the players. That's what they've decided.
Well, so I haven't seen any owner come out and say this is unacceptable or whatever. So the owners are good with it. So they've said, do this in the workplace. We're fine with it.
Well, then skip the anthem. That's the next step. Skip the anthem. Don't do it.
Well, I mean, I guess you could argue you play the anthem for the people who enjoy the anthem and like that feeling and that tradition. And if you don't want to stand, you don't stand. I mean, I think what's happened here is the big transition.
You know, this conversation is going to take place, you know, all season long. All season long,
I don't know.
The cameras are going to be on who's kneeling.
Well, I think what's going to happen is who takes it to another level. Who does take the fine and put on, you know, take off their jersey and wear a shirt during the anthem that speaks to a message? Who's going to take that $50,000, $100,000 fine? Because the NFL will fine them for that. That's in the labor agreement. I mean, these guys wear the wrong socks and they're getting fined. You've seen in the locker room every week, they actually lay out with pictures and
they celebrate the wrong way, they get a fine.
And explanations to the players on the chalkboard in the Bucks locker room. These are the colors you have to wear. Remember your pants and they have to hit certain marks, but that's all part of the labor agreement.
You can't use the football as a prop and this and that.
Well, just even talking about uniforms.
Yeah.
But this kind of situation is not something that the NFL is able to crack down on because it's not in the labor agreement. And the labor union, of course, supports the players. And the owners are all in favor. So is it really a big deal if the owners like it?
You know what?
I don't know.
You know what? I don't think the next move is to see whether any sponsors pull out or whether any if there's any change at the turnstile. And I don't anticipate it.
I don't anticipate it either. I just don't think it's that. It's that gripping. It's getting the headlines. And Mike Evans, I think it's a little bit weird that he apologized and said he wouldn't do this again 10 months ago, and now he's back doing it.
But it's not hitting the owners in the pocketbook, Steve. Not in the pocketbook. And that's what counts, ultimately.
Ultimately, but it's got to be significant. It can't be 5% of their income or 10%, and that's not enough. It's got to be something
they see
truly
something slipping away.
Damaging.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's ever going to go there. And frankly, they may be picking up audience and be picking up
casual fans.
Fans, yeah. Because of the protests.
Yeah.
You know, people who like that. So it's just a crazy issue. I don't know where it's going to go, Ira, but I think the next step is what is the next step for the players to get more attention when this does die down a little bit? They got to, you would think something has to come next. You hope that maybe it's demonstrations in parking lots before the game, coordinated efforts, and maybe a protest tailgates and a real organized effort before the game for fans. I don't know. Maybe they work with the teams to put something on the jumbotrons after the anthem. You can have a unified statement from the league. I don't know, or from the players.
The problem with the Bucks in Minneapolis was they kneeled down during the game. And you know, I hate to be so crass, but that's what Buck fans are thinking. And I'm here to amplify those thoughts. And we can't have another performance like that against the Giants.
No,
just can't happen.
And I think you delivered the best, as always, the top sage wisdom of this podcast when you said you thought we all thought we were past a game like that. And part of it's that it happened so early. It's different if you're 7-5 and you lay a clunker like that, but this team was healthy. They were rested. They were mentally there. They coming off a win, hurricane behind them, and that happened. So that's where we are, Kaufman. I will see you at One Buck Palace this week.
Have an informed podcast because we will have been in the locker room. We'll get some of the thoughts from the players.
Yeah, we'll be able to get a little more insight, get a little more juice. We'll have a better handle of these injuries. Javier Ira is keeping track of our predictions on the podcast for the Bucks game specifically. He actually tweeted out a spreadsheet. We are going to make that a definite Thursday tradition to pick the game, try to give a score.
I believe we all picked the Bucks to beat the Vikings.
We did all pick the Bucks, and if you need Javier's Twitter feed to see exactly what your pick was, it's there. We did all pick the Bucks this week. We'll see. But that's
all right, I'll see you at One Buck Place,
my friend.
I love
a little competition, Ira. Anything fun on the plate? What are you having for dinner tonight? Anything
tonight?
Anything
I believe it's going to be seafood pasta, Steve. First of all, it's cheap. And that goes along. And I got my son, staying with us for a couple of weeks. And, boy, that boy can eat, Steve. So, spaghetti, you get a lot of it. Pour the sauce on, a little ricotta. You know, I don't make it like you do. But I got shrimp and I got scallops. Nothing wrong with that. A little garlic knot on the side.
You're going to saute them up, grill them up? What are you going to do?
Yeah, grill them up.
All right.
So we're looking forward to
it. Yeah, feed your son son well, Ira. Don't eat too much.
He said he went to the casino the other night, and him and the girlfriend, they walked away with $800. We went to a Mexican restaurant later that night, and he let me pick up the tab. All he did was pay for the tip.
Does he realize
what kind of son did I raise?
Does
over here,
he realize Steven? How little you earn here at JoeBucksFan.com?
The man's living large. He's got 8 big bills in his wallet, and he's giving tip money to Rosalita over there.
Unbelievable, Ira. All right, we'll talk to you Thursday. We will see you Saturday, of course, at Ed Morris, Alfa Romeo, and Brandon. And
come on out.
Plenty of food there. You don't even have to pay. Everybody doesn't have to pay. We'll see you there.